This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
The Score Midday Show.
Make it sexy.
Chicago Cubs baseball is on the air. It's game one of a brief two-game series between the Chicago Cubs and the defending world champion Los Angeles Dodgers. Seiya drives one in the air to left. This is going to be up against the wall. Yes, two runs will score.
Cole Armstrong gets a high fly ball, deep right field. Look up and forget about it. Long gone. Pete Cole Armstrong.
Shota Imanaga will leave. He departs with the lead, 7-5. Swinging a bouncing ball to third. Bobbled by Workman. And a run is in. Deep drive to left. Trouble going back is Happ, and that ball is off the top of the wall. And the Dodgers now lead 10-7.
Someone once told me time is a flat circle. Everything we've ever done or will do, we're going to do over.
Swinging a drive, right field and deep. If it's fair, it's going to be a home run. It's gone. Kyle Tucker, a 2-1 homer to right. A swing and a drive, left center field and deep. Back goes Edmund. It's got a chance. That ball is gone. It's a home run. The ball game is tied. Miguel Amaya has homered to the basket in left center. Listen to this play.
The pitch to Ian Happ.
Swinging a base hit into right. Brujan around third, heading home. Here comes the throw to the plate. Cubs win. Cubs win the ball game. Ian Happ, a game-winning single. One for the memory books, Ron. Woo. What a great win for the Cubs tonight.
The Score Midday Show. Middays 10 till 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
If you love theme parks and you love roller coasters, well, you probably like the Cubs experience. And the thing about roller coasters is, once you find a favorite, you just want to ride that thing over and over and over again. And that's how it went for those watching the Cubs and the Dodgers last night. An instant classic, an 11-10, come from behind, come from ahead loss. No, come from behind win, yes. That is the story here in Chicago as we wake up with you on an edition of Score Middays. Layla Rahimi has the day off. Marshall here is hanging out with Mark Grody on NFL Draft Eve. It's appropriate as we broadcast live from the Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Behind the glass, we've got Ray Diaz, Robbie Triana also helping out, Tyler Farengol. You can log on and see us on twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Connor O'Donnell, Jenna Duddleston, and Matt Naya holding it down from that end. We've got so much to get to. Dave Wannstedt coming up in about 20 minutes. Jed Hoyer will join us at 11:25. Jake Butt at high noon to join us. Not for the segment High Noon, which we're bypassing today because we got so much we got to stuff in, but he's going to join us at 12 p.m. And then Russell Dorsey stops by at 1 p.m. Of course, Who's Your Guy continues day 3 of 5 of you telling us the prospect that you want us to tell you about. That comes your way at 12:25, a couple of segments of that. But Mark, have you let it wash over you yet, the experience that you went through last night to get to this point where you can talk about it?
Raging Bull is what it was last. Raging Bull at Great America. If we're doing roller coasters,
okay, that's yours?
Absolute. And I have done exactly what you said. Go on that. Last summer, I went last summer. Went on the got that fast pass, which isn't the same as it used to be at Great America.
A lot of people got the fast pass now. It's like TSA PreCheck.
Oh, it is worth it. It is worth the extra $100 or whatever it is.
But if you have TSA PreCheck, you know the lines are a lot longer than they used to be, even if you have TSA PreCheck.
That is very true. But that's what the Cubs were last night, man. That was. I don't know who the best Raging Bull of the night was, because there were so many great moments in the game last night, whether it was Miguel Amaya with the, oh my God, Miguel Amaya putting the ball in the basket with two outs in the ninth inning to tie the game at 10. The dramatic home run by Pete Crow Armstrong. Just thing after thing after thing going down last night. And I'm just scratching the surface. Didn't even mention the Kyle Tucker two-run homer on a slider against a lefty. So that game was one that you just could not walk away. Like, I couldn't even last night, Marshall, and this went for Friday's game as well against Arizona, I could not even flip during the breaks.
Wow.
Usually I'm a flip.
You don't want to miss anything.
I didn't want to miss a thing. I didn't want to miss a Taylor McGregor report. I didn't want to miss a thing that was going down in that game, because it would have been would have been very easy because I can get careless, right? You come, you flip around, you come back, and there's one out in the inning. No, that was not happening last night. And guess what? We may be in store for more games like this with the Cubs if that offense keeps clicking and the lack of sufficient bullpen continues to occur and the wind blowing out at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, we had Ian Happ on the show yesterday. I asked him, what are the ideal conditions at Wrigley? He said, wind blowing out 100 miles per hour. And it felt like that watching the game as you see Shota Imanaga give up three runs in the first, all of them unearned, by the way, because, well, I've been known to say Gage Tater Workman. Right now, he's Gage Error Workman.
Wow, you took away the Tater. Oh, my God.
Because I wanted him to see him hit Taters. Instead, I'm seeing error after error after error. Two big ones in this game, including on two what looked like routine balls. And this, if you remember, is a Rule 5 draft pick, so they have to keep him on the active roster or else they have to give him back to the Detroit Tigers, which I know a lot of people are clamoring for now because the third baseman situation has gotten so bad. At one point in this game, when the Cubs, they took the 5-3 lead in the bottom of the first, right? And then they give it back after going up 7-4 and another Gage Workman error with the bases loaded. Not the best outing from the bullpen, but I've kind of come to expect that. I think you remember in the group chat, I said bullpen question mark, more like pig pen, which of course I didn't think about at the time, but that brought me back to last week.
Yeah, I started feeling bad about myself again. Yeah, I was every once in a while, like I'll wake up in the middle of the night, I'll be like, oh yeah, Marshall Harris thinks I'm pig pen. I'm like, my God, do I have to do something better? No. Do I have to shower more? I don't understand why he did that to me.
The Cubs bullpen situation has become a pig pen, and you don't know what you're going to get any given night.
But hold on, and maybe this is just irony here. The best player of the night last night. We played some of the hits.
It wasn't Brad Keller.
It was not Brad Keller. But you know who it was? I don't care who hit home runs last night. Porter freaking Hodge.
Wait a minute. He was the best player to you?
Yes.
Because he inherited a runner on second in the 10th inning.
And didn't. Nobody was pitching last night, right? Balls flying out of the park. It was like, again, the Friday game against Arizona. The MVP of that game was Ryan Presley because he only allowed one hit in the 9th inning. Porter Hodge inherits the base runner, a scoreless 10th inning, and that enables the Cubs to win the game ultimately on Ian Happ's smash into right field. All business. Got it over with. We all go home, play the song.
Bears. I will see you a Porter Hodge and raise you a Gavin Hollowell, who fresh off the plane from Iowa or wherever they were playing the day before, gets called up and gets instantly inserted into a wild ball game and pitches two scoreless, perfect innings. Two innings. Two strikeouts,
pretty good,
and I'm out.
Pretty good. I will see that. Oh, I will see what
more?
You just said. Yeah, okay. I didn't realize I had more. But I will see what you just said, and I agree with you. I'm about to raise you a Shota Imanaga because, do you know where I'm going with this?
I don't.
You're about to hear it. Ready? Shota in the Los Angeles fourth inning. It's 5-4 Cubs. Imanaga allows runners on first and second and nobody out. And I'll be damned if he didn't get out of it, preserved a 5-4 lead. And I know it was unpretty for the first few innings. Obviously, what was it, 5-3 after the first inning of this game? It was unpretty for both of the pitchers, May and Imanaga. But Imanaga came through when he had to in a wild day. And as I said to you guys on the text chain early in the game, maybe they just stick with these starters, say, screw it. Look, it's going to be a wild game, but eventually they did get into the bullpen.
Yeah, it was impressive that he was able to stick around as long as he did. And he had a rough night. Let's be very clear.
Shota, yeah.
Gage Workman did him no favors with the error.
Starting for the very first hitter of the game. Shohei Ohtani leads off a pretty hard hit ball, the third, but you got to make that
play. It should have been a routine play. But he kind of short-armed it and like turned his body, could not make the play.
Short-armed it, one-armed it.
All right, two things. One, this segment is brought to you by almostfreeteeth.com. Save on dental implants today. That's one. Two, I see your Shota Imanaga.
Whoa, wait a minute.
And I raise you
a
Miguel Amaya because they were down to their last out last night. And they got the job done because Miguel Amaya hit a game-tying bottom of the ninth home run to tie the game.
That was pretty
None of this happens. Porter Hodge doesn't even take the mound unless Amaya
unless he gets in there and hits the home run. So 17 hits, 11 runs. They've given up 10 runs now for the second time in 4 days. And guess what? Or 4 games. They've won both those games. I think we're seeing something with this team in that it's not a never say die attitude or anything like that. It's just they believe, all right, we gave up some runs, we'll get some back. They know how to answer the bell. That has been clear. Even in the extra inning loss to the Diamondbacks, right? They scored in the 10th and then eventually lost in the 11th after giving up the run in the 10th. So
yeah.
There's always going to be this fight back. They're not done until they're done. And that's what makes this team so excited. And I'm so excited to talk to Jed Hoyer about this and so many other things because we have questions, namely at third base. Third base is an issue right now. It is a serious issue, whether it's Gage, Error Workman, whether it's John Birdie.
Miguel Berrujan, who started the game on Friday and
Vidal
made an error.
Berrujan, but you were
I
close.
Did it again.
You were close.
I did it again.
You know why? Because you took the last thing I told you about Miguel Amaya, and you let that sit
that's
with you.
True.
You let that
that's
sit
true.
With you.
See? I'm gonna raise you on Miguel Amaya here in just
how?
A second. By the way. You ready for this?
Yes.
You ready? I mean, maybe I'm pushing it here, but I'm going to raise you. Are you ready for this? Tommy Edmund, okay? Tommy Edmund of the three-run homer, pain in the ass. Tommy Edmund's
he is
pain
a pain
in the
for
ass.
The Cubs, yes.
But, and I stand by it, you guys were giving him wind excuses when we were chatting, but he played bad defense on the RBI triple by Dansby Swanson to allow a run. I don't know if I'm like pushing this into territories it shouldn't go, but you got to take everything into, you know the play I'm talking about? The
yes.
triple where the wind is, the wind was blowing out to center field, but he acted like the ball was going to go out. I think maybe he had assumed it was going to go out. Ball drops in, another run scores, RBI triple for Dansby Swanson. Am I trying too hard now?
I think you're trying too hard. That's okay, but I'll raise you to the best player in this game. In terms of season long,
I think
and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
It's Kyle Tucker. Yeah. Kyle Tucker with the big home run, one, but also he also had 2 stolen bases.
Yeah.
He's also running the base pass. It was his first multi-steal game since May 20th of 2024. More importantly, that man's got 6 steals. He's on pace to go 35-35 on knocking on the door for 40-40. And that man is going to get paid, and I just want to know at this point, how much will he be paid, and will the Cubs even be in the ballpark, or will it be like the Alex Bregman situation where they're not one of the finalists?
Let's see if stuff like this continues to put the pressure on. I mean, the love affair is obviously there with the fans. They were chanting MVP last night when he came up, at least one time that I noticed. He also made a couple of nice defensive plays, and the home run he hit, the 2-run homer in the 8th, was just sick. It's off of a lefty. It's on a slider. I don't remember if there were 2 strikes at the time, but he saw the slider once, dared him to bring it again, and he whacks it out of the park. So no doubt about it. I mean, we will definitely ask Jed multiple questions, hopefully about Kyle Tucker. And as you brought up, the third base situation, the only thing about, and again, we'll let Jed answer the question, but it feels like it's going to be a while, Marshall, before the Cubs are able to figure out the position, because no team at this point, I don't think, is going to want to give up their good third baseman. So I think it's going to require some patience. Hopefully, Gage Workman will settle down. Hopefully, Vidal Berrujan, who scored the game-winning run last night, will settle down a little bit as well. I'm pretty confident in John Birdie. Hopefully, this starts to look better, because I believe we're going to have to be a little bit patient at the third base spot. And right now, I guess this would be the time to be patient with all the runs being scored. Thank God. Talk about, like, we always talk about a quarterback cleaning everything up on a football team. Like, if Caleb Williams is good this year, then all bets are off and there's lots of things that you don't have to worry about. It's like the same thing when it comes down to baseball. If you're scoring 6 runs a game, that cleans up a lot. That cleans up your slow starters. It cleans up the bullpen. Just about everything feels better when you can score 6 or 7 or maybe 11 runs like the Cubs did last night.
So you mentioned third base. It's telling that on a night in which the Cubs got the win, got 17 hits, 11 runs, the highest scoring offense in Major League Baseball, perfect microcosm. Gage Workman.
Tater.
Error.
I mean, you got to say it, Marshall.
Gage Error Workman.
Yeah, you can't not say it.
I've never even called him Gage Workman,
right?
Just those 2 words,
right,
until that sentence I just said.
I think it's a little bit mean-spirited, but that's fine.
I'm not being mean-spirited.
That's whatever you want to do. That's cool. Yeah.
People want him gone.
Whoa.
I'm not saying I want him gone. Okay. Do you want him gone?
No, I don't want him gone.
Okay, because you have no alternative right now.
Right. I probably sit him a couple days.
But on base. A team and a performance in which 11 runs were scored on 17 hits, Workman and then Justin Turner combined 0-for-5 with 3 strikeouts. That's third base. That's the bottom of the order.
I forgot about Justin Turner.
So, you know why you forgot about Justin Turner? You want to forget about Justin Turner.
He's become very forgettable. He's just like
0-for-15 over his last 6 games with 8 strikeouts.
He's the OG with the beard who's affable to fans. That's what he is.
And he's a clubhouse presence.
Absolutely.
A veteran.
I mean, it's nice seeing, like, if you can keep that guy on the roster, obviously, like, and you can have him be that guy, sort of your cheerleader, your veteran, then good things are happening. But right now, everybody is being depended on a little bit too much.
Yeah, it's not good, but here's the good news. If you're a Cubs fan, there's negatives. There's going to be negatives for every game. You can nitpick all you want. I'm not saying they don't have real problems with their bullpen and with third base. But here's the bottom line. The bottom line is after tonight, the Cubs don't see the Dodgers anymore. And if they win this game tonight, the Cubs, they win the season series. And not only do they win the season series against the Dodgers, they also clinch a winning record through the month of April. I want you to think about what I just said.
Yeah, they'd be 16-10 on the overall, right?
Yeah, the worst they could finish through the month of April is 16-15. And for that to be the thing that we're talking about right now, given how difficult their schedule was, is, however you want to say it, that's remarkable.
It is. And I love the fact that we hear don't have to do the whole, well, they haven't played anybody yet. They have played a lot of teams. So this does portend, well, I can't wait. Like, I haven't looked that far ahead on the schedule.
We have.
Oh, you have. Give me the easy part. Give me the soft spot then, because we have been obsessing over Dodgers and all these teams and Padres from the West Coast and talk to me about the light part of the schedule.
Do you want to hear the good news or the bad news first?
I just said I want the good news. Okay. Are you not listening to me?
Okay, I'll give you the bad news first so we can get straight to the good news.
Okay.
The bad news is after the Dodgers, they've got 3 games with the Phillies.
Here.
And then they've got a series with the Pirates, which sounds good on its face, except for you're going to see Paul Skenes in the final game of that series.
Okay.
All right?
Didn't they rock him at the last time that they played him?
That was a long time ago. After that, they've got the Brewers and the Giants. I don't know if you've seen the Giants, but they're very good as well.
Oh, and the crew is doing crew things.
After that, they go on the road to see the Mets for 3. That's a good team also, first place.
So it's not getting any better.
Not soon. Not
what
soon
did I tell
you?
What did I tell you? I said, give me the good stuff.
Here's the good news.
Jesus.
May 12th. That seems like a long ways away, right?
It does.
May 12th. They've got 3 at home with the Marlins, followed by 3 at home with the White Sox, followed by 3 at the Marlins, followed by 3 at the Reds, 3 at the home with the Rockies, 3 at home with the Reds. That sounds much softer, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
That sounds much more manageable, doesn't it?
Give me and all the Rockies.
Then they go at the Nationals for 3.
Oh, give it all to me. I just want one big schedule of Colorado Rockiness. I mean, they're going to be competing with the White Sox this year, aren't they?
They are definitely competing with the White Sox right now.
Yeah.
For bottom of the barrel.
White Sox winner. No, they lost.
What? Don't do that to my sensibilities. Anyway,
you don't care if they win right now.
We're going to take a break from talking about the Cubs. We'll have more on that. We've got the general manager, Jed Hoyer, coming your way at 11:25. But up next, we go right back into Mark Grody mode.
Oh, yeah.
The NFL draft.
Bears.
He'll talk about his thoughts and our thoughts with one, guy who knows a thing or two about football.
He's my co-host for Thursday
Dame
night.
Wadstedt. Before he joins Mark Grody on Thursday night, he's going to join us right here to talk about the NFL draft and the Bears' plans and whether they should be up, down, stay where they are, all that coming ahead. It's Marshall Harris along with Mark Grody here on 670 The Score.
Dave Wanstedt.
Would you guys get serious for a minute?
Bears head coach for 6 years.
I was one of the guys sitting in the meeting room when the Cowboys went 1-15. I was the guy watching the film, and I'm tough enough and looking forward to the challenge.
Super Bowl champion.
They go back to big day as Super Bowl champions. Dallas 52, Buffalo 17.
Dave Wanstedt on 670 The Score.
I know what I'm talking about here.
Marshall Harris, Mark Grody with you here on Score Middays. Joining us now on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline is Dave Wanstedt, Score football analyst. Download the Circa app today. Coach Wonstead can be found on the artist formerly known as Twitter at Coach Wonstead. Dave, we're closing in on the NFL draft's first round. How are you feeling about everything that you're seeing?
Well, it's good to be on with you guys. I just got in town here shortly and scrambling around. Yes, I got a big week coming up, kind of finalizing all my thoughts here, but I feel great. I mean, I think the Bears are, you know, because of what they did in the free agency, you know, with the offensive linemen, a couple defensive linemen, that they put themselves in a position. And, you know, the thing that happens in a draft is you have two boards that you're working off of. You got one board that's got everybody that's basically eligible. So let's say the number was 350, just to use a number. You know, you got a board that's your best players from 1 to 350, regardless of position. If right now, if we said Travis Hunter is the most talented player in this draft, then he would be number one on that board. It wouldn't be a quarterback, Cam Ward, or any of those guys. Then on the other board, you got your players by positions, and you got them graded, you know, however you do your grade, A, B, C, D. And then you know what your needs are, and then we used to call it the bullpen. You got your bullpen kind of in between them, and these are the five guys that we would take any one of these guys. We think these guys are going to be here when we pick, and this would be our wish list. We would be excited to take one of these guys, and then you go from there. So I think the Bears, because of filling those needs, as I said, they can sit there and almost take the best position at offensive line, defensive line, in my opinion, or running back. I think that's the three spots that I would really be excited about seeing the Bears. The safety position where they're at doesn't do much for me. The linebacker doesn't do much for me. The tight end position, I think Cole Kmet will be fine. You know, I'd almost be ready that if one of those three positions wasn't there, I'd be looking to trade out of my pick and moved on, and then you take what's kind of available to you wherever you end up.
Dave, let me then zero in on one of those positions, and that would be offensive line. And I have a philosophical question for you on the offensive line. It has not been ruled out by the Bears that Darnell Wright would be capable of playing left tackle if they would like to draft somebody that could play the right tackle position. So how difficult is it for a right tackle to move to left tackle? How difficult is that for any player? Is it a big deal?
Well, you know, Darnell, he's a good enough athlete that, number one, the guy's got to be athletic enough to do that, you know. But the second thing is, you know what, guys, and don't take this the wrong way, but the tackle spots in today's game are so much different. They're not, and I'm going to give you guys something. You know, I do a lot of work with Mike Giddings with Pro Scout, and every year he grades, his system is grading, and yet you guys know this, it's a blue player, and this is how they're playing today. It's not what they were rated when they came out of college, or if Aaron Rodgers was a blue player for 5 years at Green Bay, and now he's playing at a red player maybe. So he's a red today, where everything is today. Okay. So he grades every player on where they were playing that year leading into their Super Bowl performance. So in other words, this year he had Kansas City and Philadelphia for the whole year. And then when the Super Bowl winner comes out, a la Philadelphia, now he looks at him and says, okay, what position was blue, what position was red, what position was orange, working down the line. And the interesting thing, guys, there has not been a blue left tackle been part of a Super Bowl team in the last 10 years. Yeah. I'm not telling you talent, Nye, or one time he wasn't, perform at a blue level. You know the most valuable position over the last 10 years for a Super Bowl team on offense, on the offensive line, Take a guess.
Guard?
I'm going to guess center.
Yep, offensive center.
Wow.
Offensive center. And you look at the guys, you know, obviously it was Kelsey at Philadelphia. I don't have my list in front of me now.
Coleman Shelton. Center. Just kidding.
Shelton, I mean, I mean, no, what I'm saying,
Cam
Jurgens, you know, I mean,
Bears.
These guys are premium. The guy for Kansas City is an all pro. He plays at a high level. So the center position, and I throw that out there, coming back to your thing, if they ended up with an offensive lineman, could Darnell Wright move? Sure, he could. And would it probably upgrade the offensive line? Sure, it probably would. But, you know, don't get overblown on, you know, I was doing, when I did the Score draft show last year with Pat Manley, I was beaten on the table for them to draft it. There was two centers that I was in love with, the kid from Oregon and the kid from West Virginia. And they, I said, God, take one of these offensive linemen in the first three. You know, they were both gone by the end of the second round. And I think they both made good old rookie team this year. But so don't get overly go over the top on offensive tackles.
So team,
the ball comes out so quick now, guys, and it's you know, they're not holding it like they used to, and seven step drops and. It's just a different game. It really is.
You are listening to the Score Midday Show. You know the voice of the gentleman that we are speaking to right now. That is Dave Wanstead, Marshall Harris, and Mark Grody with you. And Dave, check this out, man. You talked about the draft show last year. Tune in tomorrow night. You ready, Dave? 6 to 9 for draft night on the Score. I will be joined by Dave Wanstead and our good friend Judson Richards as we will be live during round one of the draft. We'll have live reports from Hallis Hall, Chris Emma. Instant reaction to what the Bears decide to do with the 10th overall pick. That's tomorrow night from 6 to 9 right here on the Score in the Odyssey app. The show will also be streamed on YouTube and Twitch. One more thing on what you're talking about with the offensive line here, Dave. Does that mean, like, just to kind of conclude what you're discussing, does that mean that if you're looking at an offensive line, whether take the best player on the offensive line, whether it's a guard, a center, or a tackle, is it gotten to that point, or is it just moving in that direction with the examples you brought up at center?
No, I think it's definitely moving that direction. I really do. I think these guys are interchangeable now. And if you're a good enough athlete, you know, you can pretty much play all the spots. And there's some guys out there this year, you know, the big guy at Ohio State, he played two or three positions. I mean, there are some good athlete guys out there that I think could play multiple spots. I haven't studied them in that much detail, but I just wouldn't get hung up on, we got to have a left tackle type of guy. That's all I'm trying to say.
So you talked about tight end not being something that you would look at 10, even though a lot of people put in a lot of eyes on Tyler Warren, Colston Loveland. I'm curious, does that change at all because Ben Johnson loves 12 personnel so much and he's been able to do so much with guys like Sam LaPorta in his previous stop? That doesn't sway you at all? You would be more inclined to take a lineman, or if, I guess, Ashton Jeanty fell down to 10, take him?
Oh, I'd take Jeanty tonight. Can they give us to it tonight? I take them tonight.
Even with the depth of the running backs?
That's in his DNA, though, right, Wani? Yeah, a good running back.
Well, I like a running back that had 1,700 yards on after contact. That's what I like. And I like a running back that led college football with 10-plus yard runs. That's what I like in a running back. So, but you're right. You know what? I was looking at this the other day. I think this is going to be as good a draft as it's been in, I don't know, 5-10 years at the running back position. I think probably when Christian McCaffrey and Alvin Kamara, I don't know what year that was, when they all came out, you know, it was Joe Mixon, it was Aaron Jones. I mean, there was about 10 backs that came out from 1 to 4, say, in those rounds that made a big impact in the NFL. And I think there's going to be, you know, there could be 4 backs taken before the second round is over this year. I think that what Saquon Barkley did for running backs to open everybody's eyes to say, hey, this is the importance of a running back if you want to have a chance to win a Super Bowl. I think that's going to carry a lot of weight going into this year's draft. And I think three of the backs are in the Big Ten Conference, guys, that we've been seeing play here. You know, obviously, Gentry's one guy, but then him and the Hampton kid, I'm sorry. You know, those two guys are going to be the probably the two top guys. But then the both backs at Ohio State and the Caleb Johnson kid at Iowa. So you probably got three, four, and five, and, you know, could be the you know, taken before the end of the second round.
And that's why when you say that, Dave, I'm and that was 2017 you were referred to. Christian McCaffrey was the only first round back taken that year, and this one feels kind of like that draft. That's why I'd be hesitant to take the running back and stock up on other things that you need, because let's be honest, the Bears, they have depth issues. They need a lot of things at a lot of positions.
Yeah, I would take Gentry and not look back. If it wasn't him, I think what you're saying, I would not dispute that. I wouldn't. You know, and the tight end thing, here's what's going to happen, okay? I don't think that Warren and Loveland are going to be – I think one of those guys is going to be there, probably Loveland, at the Bears pick at 10. And if they took him, I mean, he is worthy of that pick. I think the guy got shortchanged a little bit. Number one, you know, he got banged up and got hurt. We all saw Michigan play last year. They didn't even have a quarterback half, you know, most of the year. I mean, it wasn't fair to the kid. And so he comes from the Jim Harbaugh mentality. You know, he's a tough guy. The guy wouldn't have survived at Michigan if he wasn't able to line up and hit somebody in the mouth. So he's a, you know, he's kind of a tight end. I think he's a lot like the Bowers kid. It came out of Duke. You know, you can put him out wide. He's a mismatch catching the ball. You know, where Tyler Warren is a little bit of everything. God, I mean, you know, guy played five different positions, I believe it was, at Penn State. So, I mean, he's going to be a guy that's a lot like Kelsey. You know, I think that Loveland is a guy a little bit more like the Bowers kid or like the guy at the 49ers, Kittle. I put him in that category because he's a tougher blocker. And I put Warren in the category like a Kelsey. You know, we've seen Kelsey play wide receiver and running back yep. and up under center. You know, I always like to have a picture, a little bit of a comparison when I'm looking at these guys. And I think both of these guys are going to be stars in the NFL. I really do.
Like hearing it, and I can't wait to ask you more about those guys tomorrow night. I have one last question. We've only got about 30 seconds here left, Dave, but here's the showdown. If at number 10, the top defensive tackle, Mason Graham, is available, and the top offensive tackle is available, Will Campbell out of LSU, what direction do you go? In other words, offensive line or defensive line, Dave?
Let me ask you guys, did you guys watch the Super Bowl? I'm saying that being funny because I know you.
So defensive line is your answer. Yeah. So defensive line.
Anybody that watched that game and saw them not blitz and play four defensive linemen against the defending Super Bowl, a pretty darn good offensive line, and it wouldn't walk away saying, okay, am I going to take an offense or a defensive lineman? What makes more of an impact?
Run right to the podium if Mason Graham is available.
We got you. We got you, yes. Coach. We got you. Thanks so much for joining us, Dave.
Okay. I mean, I that's just, again, this is me. This is how I see it.
And, that's why we have you on, man.
I said, you got to be kidding me. They didn't blitz.
Didn't need to.
Unbelievable.
Did not need to.
I know. I mean, so don't get me going. We could spend the whole show.
Dave, we got something to do. We got to let you go. We got something to do. So we'll talk to you for 3 hours
Ronnie,
tomorrow night.
We appreciate
night.
You. Thanks so much for stopping by. I can't wait to hear you tomorrow night with Mark and Judson.
Okay, sounds good, guys. Be safe.
See you.
All right, so that was Dave Wannstedt. He's great analysis there. Can't wait to hear what he has to say with Mark Grody and friends tomorrow night, first round of the draft. We will continue the NFL draft conversation, though. Coming up next, we're going to hear some of that sound from Hallis Hall yesterday as Mark Grody gives us his take as we discuss that running back position and whether the Bears should, well, I don't know, maybe trade up. I don't know. We will discuss in full, though, Ian Cunningham's thoughts on the other side. It's middays on The Score.
I feel really confident where we're at. I think this one's going to be a little wild, but we're going to be prepared for all the different scenarios that pop up. The time working with Ben throughout this has been great. Some really good communication, some great discussions as we set the board and get prepared for the draft in a couple days.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
That was Ryan Poles talking about where he sits in, as far as the first round goes, 10, and where he sits overall. Three picks before anybody else will get three picks in the NFL draft, which of course begins with the first round tomorrow night starting at 6 o'clock, and then we've got day two, and then we've got day three, and then we've got all the right reaction, the Sunday morning quarterback, if you will, because, you know, it ends on Saturday, so I can't say Monday morning quarterbacking of it all. Mark Grody along with Marshall Harris trying to get you through it, and Mark, he talked yesterday, Ian Cunningham talked at length yesterday at House Hall in their pre-draft press conference, and a lot of questions came out of that. One of them was what Dave Wannstedt was just talking with us about, and that's what to do about the running back situation. We know they have DeAndre Swift. They need another one. It is a deep class of running backs, and we're just trying to figure out where the Bears stand on, is it Ashton Jeanty or bust, or are there several running backs they feel like will fit Ben Johnson's system?
There is another effect of the Super Bowl-winning Philadelphia Eagles. Wannstedt talked about the crazy good defensive line playing, the lack of blitzing. The other part was Saquon Barkley. Everybody gets excited when they see a running back do what running backs, you know, used to do and periodically do in this NFL. So I think he sort of put the NFL on blast, and you have this guy in Ashton Jeanty. And the question is, in this era of the NFL, do you take a running back top 10? It was pretty easy to do it with Saquon Barkley because he had generational talents coming out of Penn State. Now we got to take that question to the Bears assistant general manager Ian Cunningham yesterday, more philosophical about taking a running back. I don't know if Ashton Jeanty's name was actually mentioned, but everybody knows who we're talking about here. Here's Ian Cunningham on drafting a running back.
Yeah, and there's obviously a bunch of really good running backs at the top of this draft. What's your philosophy in terms of weighing the instant reward of that position with also the longevity and how that compares to other positions?
Yeah, I think the value is if he's a playmaker and a really good player, you take a really good player. You know, that's the beauty of our process. Our philosophy is best player available. Yeah, we weigh premium position versus non-premium position, but at the end of the day, it's a playmaker, right? And if we see him in that role, I think you can go take a playmaker that's not a premium position.
So clearly, because he said it twice, they do not believe that running back is a premium position, as most teams don't. But he said that's a playmaker. So almost saying, if we think that this guy could be a playmaker in our offense, it would probably be silly not to consider him at number 10.
If he can run down the field, jump backwards over someone, and make some things happen, that would be a playmaker. That would be a playmaker.
Yeah.
And so I'm hearing him say that, and he gave you an answer, but he didn't give you the answer, right?
No, of course not.
And why would he? Because number one,
I didn't expect him to.
It's Lions season.
Sure.
I'm not going to tell you what we're going to do because that's going to affect how other teams maybe treat what we're doing.
I'd hate to keep
it under the vest.
Sorry, I'd hate that press conference, honestly, if I was Ryan Poles and Ian Cunningham, just because you want to say nothing, but you want to at least give something, if maybe to redirect another team and just to sort of satisfy the media contingent, which obviously is not their priority.
Right. The media is there to do their job. The Bears are here to do their job. And I think, on the one sense, the media is the conduit to the fan base, to the general population. That's what the media is. On the other hand, I don't think the fan base cares about us as long as the Bears win. You know what I'm saying? If the Bears are winning, which they haven't been doing, then the media wouldn't matter as much to them.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying, but even when a team is winning, you want to know how you're going to make this team better. What are you going to, like we're talking about with the Cubs, like we will discuss with Jed Hoyer.
Cubs 11-25.
Cubs look really, really good, but we're greedy. And I always say, like, with the Cubs especially, greed is good. With the Bears, greed is good. You are entitled as a fan in this town to be greedy for your teams because you watch these teams, you pay for these teams. Greed is good. Want more out of your team, and I think that's what we're seeing. Gordon Gecko Grody.
I didn't know.
Right.
Now I know. That's greed, right. Greed is good.
Greed is good.
You're not even working on Wall Street.
Greed
this man is
good.
Is telling the people exactly how he feels about, you know, wanting more. And it's not how you feel. It's how the fans feel. Let's
Absolutely.
Be honest.
Right.
Who doesn't want more? Who says, oh, I have enough. I don't want more. People are always trying to improve their station, whether it be in life, whether it be their sports teams, whether it be the quality of the food they're about to eat.
Yes.
That's what we do. We strive for more.
It's two things that I just said that typically sound bad. Greed is good and sense of entitlement. I think that fans should have a sense of entitlement in this town, especially when we're talking about the Cubs and we're talking about the Bears. Yeah, Bears have not been in the Super Bowl since 2006, haven't won one since 1986, technically. So, yes, I do think that a degree of greed is good for our teams.
And, with the Cubs, they're no longer the lovable losers. That thing stopped when they won the World Series. They crossed that line, but you understand that wasn't the finish line. That was just a checkpoint on one of those racing video games to continue going.
Oh, absolutely. Like I always say, act accordingly. The fans have continued to act accordingly.
They show
fans,
up, right?
They've raised their game to, and you could still say, it's a blast to go to Wrigley Field. It's fun to go to Wrigley. If you have a casual day, if you're just there to have fun and drink beer, that's all good. But there is now, along with all of that fun and the seventh inning stretch and all that goes with a Cubs game, you should expect the Cubs to win and not be in the playoff for the last 4 years.
More than just a little alcohol, the sound of a bat, and of course, some good times. Up next, we will continue our Bears conversation. Ben Johnson has inspired me from his poet session yesterday. I'd call it Dead Poet Society. I know I'm not a poet, but here we go. To trade or not to trade?
Ooh.
That is the question. Whether 'tis nobler in the mind to wait the picks and offers of outrageous fortune or to pick up the phone and ravage a sea of prospects.
Oh, my God.
That is what we will discuss.
This guy.
It's Mark Grody. It's Marshall Harris. Score Middays here on 670 The Score.